Good morning, everyone. This is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Joining me in studio is Joe Bergeron, who's the president and CEO of the Association of Vermont Credit Unions. That was a surprise for me, Joe. I guess they have associations. I never thought about it, but there's so many in Vermont, part of our banking system. They play a critical part, don't they?
There are a lot of trade associations in Vermont, but we have two financial trade associations in the state, one for credit unions and one for banks.
Oh, excellent. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Can we take a few minutes to talk about you? I love talking about you. That's good. Particularly about the association.
Sure. So I don't know. There's not a whole lot to say about me. I'm an old timer in terms of my time working for and with Vermont Credit Unions. So started way back in 1978, I think it was, and became president of the Association of Vermont Credit Unions, then known as the Vermont Credit Union League, sometime thereafter. And so have been there ever since, advocating for Vermont Credit Unions.
And I read that you are the longest sitting president and CEO of any state credit union trade association in the United States. Did you know that? That's pretty impressive.
I think I am. If you hang around long enough, it's not hard to get there.
So. Exactly. So about the association itself, could you tell, we're going to have to ask that question, what's the difference between credit unions
right.
and banks?
That's right. Everybody
that
does.
Was a no-brainer for me when I was putting this show together. But you offer a lot of services to banks. Maybe you could just talk
right.
about that.
So our association is a kind of like two components, sort of. One part of it is a typical trade association. And as a trade association, like many do, we advocate for our members, both at the state level, the federal level, both legislatively and on the regulatory front, too, so with regulators and lawmakers. We also have another half of our organization that's really indistinguishable, but on paper anyway, it's another half, and that gets more into back office services that we provide or support some credit unions, particularly smaller credit unions that have a smaller infrastructure and fewer resources.
So when a credit union like mine just went through a merger, do you get involved at all, or they will come to you for advice perhaps and let them do their thing?
We get apprised. And it depends on the credit unions that are merging, and consolidation in financial
right.
services is a thing these days and has been for some time. So I remember when I started in Vermont so long ago, there were 72 credit unions. That was a high point for a number of credit unions in Vermont. Huh. Today there are 17 credit unions in the state of
Whoa.
Vermont.
Because they've merged together or just
mostly
away?
Because of merger, but those 17 credit unions are much, much larger than those 72 were, you know, 40-something yeah. years ago. And it used to be that credit unions were in Vermont and everywhere in the country were isolated from each other, so to speak, in terms of, you know, you had a credit union for the employees of ABC Manufacturing Company, or a credit union for the employees of a school district or a church parish or
right.
so on and so forth. You didn't really hear about them out in the public. You know, you weren't walking down the street seeing signs and advertisements for those kinds of credit unions because they were focused on the employees and families of employees in those particular huh. businesses, school districts, and so on and so forth. And it wasn't because of a legal requirement or anything. It was only because if you're starting a financial institution, from scratch, you know, having a captive audience is the easiest place to start to work
right.
with. And we're not talking in a day of social media and all that kind of and email and all that kind of thing. So it's signs on the wall and that kind of stuff. So, you know, having a relationship with a company that has a few hundred or more employees in a building that are there every day and they go to lunch and they walk past the door that says credit union on it. You know, it's a lot easier way to start a credit union in those days. Today's a lot different. you know, social media, advertising, outreach, so on and so forth. So everything's a lot more public. Over the years, a lot of credit union, a lot of people out in the street approached credit unions because they heard from their neighbors, hey, I belong to a credit union, got a great car loan rate or whatever it might be, my mortgage or something from my credit union. And so the neighbor says, well, geez, can I become part of that credit union? And that snowballs over the years, over the decades. And so today, most of those 17 credit unions in Vermont have a field of membership, meaning people who are eligible to join that credit union, that is much broader than just employees of a single company, mm-hmm. school district, or town, or whatever.
Well, they sure have the merger skills down, because my credit union just merged, and right. I wouldn't know it, because my husband and I are a little old, and we know how to work the computer, mm-hmm. and we didn't want anything to change, and mm-hmm. it didn't, and it just smoothly merged, and there you go. So well, I think that's great.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's great when it goes like that. Sometimes there's some bumps in the road. And,
right.
You know, and any kind of consolidation between two, whether it's two financial institutions, two radio stations, or whatever it may
right.
be, there's going to be some behind the scenes, you know, hoops and hurdles that they have to deal with and whatnot. But, you know, providing service, quality service to members on an ongoing yeah. basis, and making it as little disruptive as possible is everyone's goal.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. Sorry, let's go ask the basic question here. What is the difference between banking, banks, and credit unions?
So credit unions are cooperatives. And, you know, we have a lot of cooperatives in Vermont. They are, other than credit unions, they're mostly, you know, one-offs or small in number. And so in a cooperative, the people who do business with the organization are the owners. And in most banks, and there are different forms of banks, I'll be the first to admit that, but the majority of banks nationwide are stock-owned entities. And so, you know, the people who own the stock, who therefore own the bank, may not even be account holders in that bank. They can be anybody. They could be local. They could be far away. But it's a much smaller group of people, typically, than the totality of all of the people that do business with the organization. And, you know, banks typically take your middle-of-the-road average bank in Vermont, a community bank, and your typical middle-of-the-road average credit union, and you'll see that they both offer, say, mortgages, they both offer checking accounts, credit cards, right. debit cards, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of similarities. The differences between them are oftentimes in the rates and fees, and I'm talking in aggregate here. You know, there's always going to be somebody who's going to offer a better rate on a CD than you, depending on the particular times and situation
right.
and the market that they're working in and whatnot, and so on and so forth. But on aggregate, whether it's across the state of Vermont or nationally, rates and fees at credit unions are typically better than they are at other kinds of institutions in Vermont that's mostly community banks.
Mm-hmm.
The real difference between the two as a cooperative, and I think this bears true for, you know, cooperative food stores, cooperative housing, cooperative electric utilities and whatnot, is that it comes in the decision-making process. You know, in any kind of business, you know, one, you have to be viable financially to stay afloat. And if your business has an owner, whether it's a sole proprietor or a large group of owners or stockholders or whoever it is, you know, hopefully you're profitable enough that you're providing some rate of return to those
right.
owners, those
right.
stockholders, let's say, if it's the bank. And so in the boardroom and in the management offices of a credit union, you are your decision-making process is forefront in mind, you know, making a return to the owners, just like it is in any other kind of business, except the owners are everybody. And so in a credit union, and there was a day when I first started where a credit union would get to the end of their fiscal year and, you know, they'd see how everything shook out financially and they'd write a check to each member for a
right.
portion of the profits.
Yeah.
today, the modern version of that is not writing a check to people like that for a portion of profits, but reflecting it every day in the rates and fees that they get.
Got it.
In a for-profit institution, same decisions are taking place, but the philosophies and the thought process behind it are different. So in that boardroom and in that management office, you know, you still have forefront in your mind, you know, is what I'm going to do here, this new program I'm starting, these different rates I'm setting and whatnot, you know, are they going to be attractive to consumers first and foremost? But then two, you know, is it going to contribute to the profit that I'm going to share with my owners, whoever
right.
those people are,
right.
except those people are not the account holders necessarily. They're the stock owners.
Right.
So those profits leave, the financial institution in terms of, you know, putting them to work inside the financial institution. In a credit union, you know, the flow of money is very simple. You take money in from depositors. You lend that money out to borrowers who are also members. Both groups are members.
Right.
You pay your bills. You have to set aside a certain amount by law for safety and soundness. And what's left over is left to return to the owners. And the owners are everybody, so you go back and return that money to all the owners by waiving a fee, by lowering a fee, by giving them a better rate on their car loan, so on and so forth. So that's the primary difference in my mind between banks and credit unions.
That's great. I was just thinking, is the Vermont State Employees Credit Union, that when you're talking back years ago where a credit union was developed just for a specific group,
right, right.
That accounts for that name.
It was just that credit union started for the employees of the state of Vermont.
Right.
Went a long time that way.
Right.
And most credit unions, not just that one, but their membership could include the employees of whatever organization it was and their family members.
Right. Joe, one of your services, which is very important for sure, is legislative advocacy mm-hmm. for the credit unions.
Right.
And being a political junkie, I sort of looked up what was happening this year,
mm-hmm.
and I found S-180, which is an act relating to the investment of state funds in credit unions, which was interesting because the pension is a huge issue last year and this year and maybe future years about the
right.
liability because of the GASB rules they changed. You had to
right.
Had to note the liability, and we were up many billions with a B.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering if you're familiar with S-180, and I read it, and I honestly, it's a very small bill. There's only one paragraph in it.
Very few words.
Yeah, what does it say? I've read it several times.
So several decades ago, there was a provision put into the state statutes that the purpose of it, or how it came to be, kind of escapes memory and whatnot. But the bottom line is that the treasurer at the time, I believe it was Jeb Spaulding, at that time there was some fine-tuning going on the list of places that the state of Vermont, the treasurer's office, could place its funds. And so included in there was what you would expect, banks, savings and loans, so on and so forth, and a lot of non-financial institution kinds of resources and whatnot, and cooperative credit unions, but they left out just credit unions.
Ah.
So cooperative credit union is kind of a category of credit union. Opportunities Credit Union, based in Burlington, Vermont, is a co-op, a community development credit union. They're all cooperative. A community development credit union. And a community development credit union is, in short version, has a focus on lower income populations and assisting those individuals. Not exclusively, but a lot of their business is focused on that portion of the market. And Opportunities Credit Union in Burlington does, and Winooski does a great job doing that. But anyway, in the statute some 20 years ago, when they referenced credit unions, they just put community development credit union. And all we're doing in this bill is deleting the words community development so that it enables the treasurer to deposit funds in any credit
Union. Oh, great.
Now, that doesn't mean that the treasurer is going to place one, that the treasurer has to place funds in the credit union. just like any bank. They don't place funds in every bank in the state of Vermont. They can, but they don't, because it depends on their needs and the times and so on and so forth and whether institutions are willing to do that kind of thing or not. And we're not looking at – there's no expectation, you know, that the state of Vermont is going to place funds, for instance, from a retirement fund and so on and so forth in – you know, a Vermont credit union any more than it places it in a Vermont domiciled bank.
Right.
The state, because it has, you know, a big budget by Vermont standards and so on and so forth, has relationships with places like TD Bank and M&T Bank and whatnot for the majority of its business and its transaction activity and whatnot. But it sets aside a small portion of its overall funds that are on hand to invest in Vermont institutions from time to time. And we just don't think, since credit unions comprise more than half of the institutions domiciled in Vermont, and the largest credit unions are larger than the largest Vermont banks, like the credit union that you're a member of, NEFCU/VSECU, is 1.5 times the size of the largest Vermont domicile bank.
Oh, good for us.
So we just think that it's time to stop excluding credit unions from the list of options that the treasurer has available to him or her.
And credit unions play an important part in our economy, and they also are very involved in their community. Every activity, every event, when you see who's sponsoring it, there's always a credit union on that sponsor list. So they're very involved. And I know there's a lot of funding given to the flood relief, and we won't go into the specifics there, but they really stepped up.
Yeah, there's a lot of community involvement by most credit unions. You know, every credit union tries to get involved in its community and the people that it serves because – you know, like I said before, its owners are its members, and its members are the local people in the community. So it makes sense to focus their efforts locally like that.
Well, they sure do. And when I was talking to Joe the other day, he was saying, well, I've been on your side of the mic. And I'm like, what does that mean? And I looked it up. He's had quite a bit of experience with the mic. And he does a podcast, which is called Credit Unions on Air. Are you still doing that?
We do that. It's not as regular as your radio show here, but, you know, when an issue is appropriate and whatnot, and we have the right circumstances and whatnot, we do. We don't try to promote it. It's public, but we don't try to promote it.
Well, it was great. And you had on with you Adam Nekrasen and Jessica Oski.
Yes.
And they have a lobbying firm, Nekrasen Group, right in Montpelier.
Correct.
Adam is very involved up in the legislature. And you all were talking about what's happening last year in 2023 and what to expect coming this year. So, and I just thought I'd list a couple of things beneficial to the credit unions, investment in workforce development, investing in rural Vermont, and in housing. Those are three things that would benefit you eventually for people looking for help in buying a house, starting a business.
Housing is, you know, a big issue in the State House, in Washington, you know, for credit unions. The largest mortgage lender in the state, I hate to, you know, just repeat the same names, but, you know, is New England Federal /VSECU. They're by far the largest mortgage lender in the state of Vermont. And they do a great job doing that. But other credit unions do mortgage business too, and they all, you know, have a lot of concerted efforts to lend to Vermonters as best they can and help out in whatever way they can. As a matter of fact, I was just looking at some data the other day that was saying how in Vermont, credit unions as mortgage lenders make smaller, on average, mortgage loans to Vermont consumers than anybody else in the state of Vermont that lends mortgage money. And you would think that it's, you know, that's their focus. We're only going to do like a small house down the street or whatnot. But no, it's because they're catering more to that segment of the population that is buying homes at, you know, a lower end of the real estate market. Doesn't mean they're not funding, you know, multi-million dollar homes just like other financial institutions do, but a greater focus. So the percent of,
good for them,
you know, low-end mortgages that get approved by credit unions is much higher than other types of lenders.
Good for the credit unions. And now we talked about workforce development. I'm sure banks in general are having a little problem staffing.
Same as everybody
else.
You know, since the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, people have gone remote, and we have credit unions with a lot more remote employees than they used to have before, and they've adapted and figured out ways to deal with it. And then you have those people, like, you know, you're well familiar with, that just said, you know, I don't need to work anymore. I'm done. We all question, where did all those people go?
That's my question. Where are they?
Right.
And why don't they have to work? I want to know their secret, I think. I'm still working, and I'm way beyond the expiration date. I saw it happening. We were summering in Maine the last couple of years, and all of a sudden restaurants were closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And you saw it just sort of expand to everything.
Yes.
And it's everywhere, like you said, and I would think, and banking in particular, that's a lot of training, and you need to know what the heck you're doing. It's very complicated, in my mind anyway, to be a teller, to work in a bank.
Is. And, you know, being a teller, and we used to say, and I think we still do in most credit unions and probably in banks too, that person on the front line, whether you call it a teller, a member representative, or whatever it is, is the most critical person, or one of the most critical positions in that institution. And if you can't find any, that's a problem.
That's true. And I know the labor market, I was reading an article about you're suffering like every other business, labor costs, healthcare costs, technology costs to try to keep up to speed with other banks. You've got to invest big bucks in technology.
Right.
IA, is that what we call it? Or AI.
AI. Yeah.
Sorry,
AI.
I'm old. It's just really hard to be successful.
It is. You know, technology is a great leveler in terms of letting a small business or a small institution, in my case, be competitive with much larger ones. But there's a balance there. It's expensive, and you don't want to be on the bleeding edge of the latest developments either, because sometimes those don't pan out.
One thing that you told me that I never heard of before was a phrase, shared banking. Could you explain? That's so cool. Could you explain that? I was telling my husband about it last night, and I thought, how neat is that?
Sure. Glad to kind of highlight that a little bit. So the Reader's Digest version of it is that if you're familiar with, you know, ATM networks, so you can have a card from your financial institution and use it at ATMs that don't belong to your financial institution because they're all connected together nationally or internationally through a network. Shared branching among credit unions is kind of like that, except instead of it being ATM machines you go to, it's the credit union's lobby that you go to. And as we were talking about at some point about, you know, walking up to what we used to call a teller window or whatever they call a different institution. And so not all credit unions participate in this, but there are many credit unions nationwide that do, and in every state in the country. And so if you're a member of a credit union that participates in shared branching, and they all have this logo that they post, kind of like ATM bugs and machines that say Visa, MasterCard, NICE, or whatever else. So if you are a member of a credit union that participates and you are in another part of the country or even across town, you can go to the branch of another participating institution to conduct your business. And the example that I always cite is my one of my sons, adult sons, who's been in Denver, Colorado, for, I don't know, 15 years or somewhere thereabouts. Yeah. So he's, you know, had a life there and everything. But he has always maintained his account relationship at the local Vermont Federal Credit Union because they participate in shared branching.
Cool.
And so when he's needed to get a, you know, a car loan or, you know, whatever else, he has always done it with Vermont Federal Credit Union. But when he needs to do something in person, or sign something or whatever else, he goes to a branch of, I think it's probably Red Rocks Credit Union that used to be closest to him somewhere in the Denver area. Cool. Where he can say, hi, I'm a member of, and he provides some ID and so on and so forth, and they can look up his Vermont federal accounts on their system.
Excellent. I love it. And I love that you can use the credit, the debit card at different, we did that in Maine all the time, mm-hmm. went to another bank and.
Sure.
So that's a great service.
Sure.
I'm surprised not all of them were members.
Well, again, we referenced technology earlier, so there's technology involved, technology doesn't come free.
Right.
So there has to be some connectivity between the institutions, and there's this switch, we call it, that all of them connect into so that they can, you know, pass information between each other. But there's all kinds of security measures and all that kind of stuff, of course.
That's great.
But it's unique to credit unions. You know, it's not all other financial institutions. It's just credit unions.
Excellent. So. You know, I was telling you how much I like to do the research for this show, and I found out that I read where Vermont has the best number one ranking of banking access, which obviously includes credit unions, and that's in the United States. What is the definition of access in this case?
So I'm not sure if I saw the same survey report or article that you're referencing, but I know that one that I saw fairly recently was saying something along those kinds of lines. And what they were referencing was physical locations in the state. So
the number, a lot of banks and
the number, well, the mostly the bridges. Number of, even if there was only a couple institutions in Vermont, the number of physical branches, let's call them, that are around the state. And, you know, Vermont's a small state geographically, right? And even though we have a small number of credit unions and a small number of banks in proportion to the size of the state, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And they have quite a few locations between them or each individually. So that's how you get to Vermont being at the top of the list.
This is talking banking. So many new names have popped up. When I first came to work, my first job was at the Merchants Bank with Dudley Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Alive and well and kicking.
That goes a couple years back.
Yes, exactly. And I could write a book just about Dudley, as everybody else could in Burlington anyway. But so now that's gone. There's M&T is new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just strange, which is good, I suppose. It's healthy to keep growing and be stronger every time there's a merger that's got to be stronger, I'm hoping.
Well, so like we discussed earlier, you know, consolidation is the name of the game in financial services and so many other businesses out there. So, you know, and the economy contributes to that and employment challenges and so on and so forth. Another difference between the banking sector and credit unions in Vermont is that, sure, there's been a lot of consolidation in both over the past 10, 20, 40 years. In the banking sector, you know, you've seen banks in Vermont that were domiciled here, headquartered here, acquired by out-of-state institutions, whether they be, you know, from the state next door or, you know, some big regional entity or larger and so on and so forth. All those Vermont credit unions, those 72 that I mentioned, there are fewer of them. We're down to 17 now. But none of those credit unions, going from 72 down to 17, have ever been acquired by an out-of-state institution, an out-of-state credit union.
Interesting.
So all Vermont credit union business that has ever been, going back to 1947 when our organization was chartered and before that, has all remained in Vermont. So the assets of a credit union that existed in 1947, and then was merged into somebody else in 77 or something, remains here.
That's great.
So the membership, the accounts, the assets, everything. Yeah.
That is really excellent. I also read where, I don't know if you were at this conference in Washington, D.C., they had a huge credit union governmental affairs conference.
Right.
Were you there?
Yes.
Yeah, because I read where all three of our congressional delegates were there.
Yes.
And what was their message to you? What did they talk to you about?
You know, we have a luncheon with them that we organize. So our association, you know, organizes during this conference of about 6,000 people of all credit union leaders nationwide.
Great.
And so it's held in the convention center and it's a big deal and whatnot. But each state, an organization like ours, organizes hill visits and some take their credit union people from, Vermont for us, take them to the offices of each lawmaker in our case, because we're only dealing with three of them, we're fortunate to be able to secure or have one of those offices secure a space for us in one of the Senate office buildings where we have a luncheon, and the three of them come to us. And we had about 30-plus Vermont credit union people there of different positions in different credit unions. And those three lawmakers come in, and, you know, we have some messaging for them about what credit unions are doing. And they share with us, you know, their concerns, their priorities, what they're what they want to know from credit unions, and mostly what they, you know, we talk legislative issues, obviously, and whatnot, but mostly we find that what they want to hear is, you know, what do you as a financial institution see going on with my constituents back in Vermont? You know, how are they doing financially? How's the housing situation? How's the employment situation? The kinds of things that we've been talking about.
Right. Well, then they're very much up on, I must get all of their emails and stuff that they send out just so, because I'm curious, and they're really right on top of everything.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, even though it's rare, but the faces change once in the blue moon in those three positions, you know, our Vermont delegation of three has a disproportional, what's the word I'm looking for, prominence or whatever, stature in Congress in relationship to the size of our state and the size of the delegation. So
thank you, Bernie Sanders, right? I would think he's certainly made a name for himself. I have to say one thing. We only have a couple of minutes before our next break. That for as long as I've been in Vermont and have worked with our congressional delegation, their staff, both in Washington and here in Vermont, are superb. And if you call with a question from a constituent or, in your case, they will bend over backwards to help you.
That's great.
That has always been the case, no matter if a new face or not. They are dedicated to helping Vermonters. And if you call, as I did, I was a legislator for a while, and I'd call and I have a constituent question. That was it.
Awesome.
It's great. We're very fortunate that way because they know everybody anyway.
Right.
So it's not like calling if you're in Illinois or something and they're like, what town are you from? Exactly. They know us here, so.
Right.
We're very lucky.
Yes, I know what you mean about knowing everybody because I am terrible with names and faces. I can remember a name and remember a face. I just can't put them together all the time.
There you go.
So they do a great job at that.
You sound like me. But they are very good at that. They're excellent. And you really get good service from their staff and from them, obviously, but from their staff. So I went on your website, and I would encourage people to go look at this website because there are some great articles on there. And I found it fascinating. I read the whole thing. It was an article you had, speaking of AI. You think I could get the letters correct. But it was an amazing article about how to change with the times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that – oh, I know. It came from Microsoft, the article. And I thought, well, they know what they're talking about. And I think people should read that because it's coming. You can fight it all you want, but it's coming, and we have to be comfortable with the change. I'm always afraid to press a button because I'm going to lose all the information because in my day I used a typewriter.
Right. That, you know,
that didn't go anywhere. And I can't remember the first computer I had. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was scarier than anything that I do remember.
I remember the first one that I used, and it looked like something from the original Lost in Space TV show or something.
Huge,
like
exactly. It's incredible. But anyway, I just thought that I would go over some of these things and just for people's information listening to it, they said, and I combined a couple of their lists that get into just three that when they're talking about the three steps to prepare for the AI culture, one is choose curiosity over fear. Got that one. We just talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is embrace failure by learning to work with AI through a continuous process. So don't be afraid to press the button. It's out there somewhere. Somebody can retrieve it, right?
Right.
You think it's lost. And the third one was this. I love this. Become a learn-it-all by embracing the need for change as opposed to know-it-all. I would like to put that on a wall somewhere. Be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all.
Right.
How cool is that?
That is very cool.
Yeah, I'm going to use that as my my new byline. just spend the time learning rather than thinking you know-it-all. because AI is scary, and they've got a lot of coverage on cable shows. And
both fascinating and scary at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And for people, I dare say, our age, but somewhere around over, perhaps, in my sphere, it is scary because you don't know. I'm always like, how does it work? You never should ask that question. Just assume it does and go with it, right?
Well, so, you know, my phone that I carry around, it's a Google Pixel, right? And I love it, and it does great things and whatnot. But, you know, I'm always amazed at, you know, what pops up on my phone or on YouTube,
oh, right,
on my computer or whatever that I was just talking about yesterday. And I may have, I don't know, obviously click something and all of a sudden
right,
something comes up that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if you go to order something,
right,
you get 5,000 of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Yeah. It's really crazy. Joe, I noticed that you've got your 77th, that's a lot of annual,
right,
77th annual meeting, and you're picking a heck of a place to go, the Equinox.
Right.
Oh, sign me up. Can I join? Can
you,
I love the Equinox.
You certainly can come along. We'd love
so
to have you there.
So what do you expect to happen there? Do you have any keynote speakers lined up yet? Or what are the topics that your credit union folks are interested in hearing about?
So we usually put together, even though we're not a credit union ourselves as a trade association, we have a gathering once a year of our member credit unions to do our usual annual business meeting kind of process, electing directors and things like that. But that's not the focal point of the weekend. The focal point is an opportunity to, you know, bring board members from credit unions who come from other walks of lives as far, and including, you know, administrative people from credit unions and whatnot, and provide a modicum of education, some socializing, connecting with each other, and that kind of stuff. So the focal point really is making connections between Vermont credit unions,
right,
and the people that run them and the volunteers that operate them and whatnot. We do have, you know, speakers, a variety of speakers. In this case, we've got a woman that's a motivational kind of speaker to cover that kind of aspect of it, general interest for, you know,
right,
people overall. But the two more specific individuals we've got are a guy named Elliot Eisenberg, who is an economist. Think of him like you're familiar with Bill Nye the Science Guy?
Yes.
So he is kind of like an economist version of that. So he's a bit of a humorist. He wears a bow tie and a suit all the time, but he's focused on the economy.
Nice.
And then we also have a gentleman who is an advocacy expert from our National Trade Association in Washington, D.C., and he works a lot with motivating credit union members and kind of analyzing election results and, you know, what is going to be the impact on credit unions if federal elections go this way versus that way, and so on and so forth. So they each are going to do a presentation, and then afterwards we'll have kind of a fireside chat between the two of them of, well, you know, if the election in November goes this way, what does that mean for credit unions? If, you know, the House is in Washington, if the House is Democrat and the Senate Republican or vice versa and so on and so forth, and then what does it mean to the economy and what's
right,
the impact to credit unions of that and so on and so forth.
What an interesting discussion that'll be.
Oh, it's all crystal ball stuff, right?
Exactly. I would sort of like to hear that one myself. So you mentioned the economy, and I think credit unions must play a very important role in Vermont's economy. And maybe you could go over some of the statistics that you brought with you.
So, like, credit unions contribute to the Vermont economy immensely. I think I mentioned before, you know, credit unions account for more than half of the financial institutions domiciled in the state of Vermont. They are businesses like any other business, and so some are large. There's some small ones, but there's some very large ones too. So the one that you're a member of is over $3 billion in assets now and touches lots of people in Vermont. Overall, about 65, maybe a little bit more than that, percent of Vermonters are a member of a credit union. And those 425,000 or so people who are credit union members in Vermont, because of the better rates and fees that I mentioned, they are keeping in their pocket about $71 million a year. And that $71 million is the difference between the car loan,
wow,
the mortgage loan, the overdraft fee, whatever that you get from a cooperative credit union versus what you'd incur at some other financial service provider in the state. So $71 million is pretty significant.
That's huge.
And people are paying, you know, taxes on what they keep in their pocket and so on and so forth. And of course, credit unions employ lots of employees these days. So, you know, when we had 72 credit unions 40 years ago, you know, there was no credit union that had more than, you know, a dozen, 15 employees. Today, you know, there's the largest ones have, you know, 300, 400, 500 employees and so on and so forth.
That's great.
And yet we still have a credit union that's the one-man operation, you know, operating out of his home. But in both instances...
Is that real?
Yes. Yes, it is. And he's a retired former postmaster for
the
U.S. Postal Service. So a small parish credit union, a lone remaining parish credit union. But in spite of the fact that there's a tiny credit union like that and then a, you know, $3 billion credit union, they both operate under the same laws, the same principles, and so on and so forth. So, you know, their services vary, because of just of, you know, volume and abilities and whatnot. But they are both driven by the same philosophies. They both have a volunteer board of directors. They're both owned by their members.
Yeah.
So
that, that always feels, I have, I'm going to admit this on air. I've never actually been to a meeting. Shame on me.
An annual meeting.
Yeah. But it's, I know that they're watching. I mean, people are involved in, and elections and that sort of stuff. It really makes you feel good. And I also like, it's sort of like Norm from Cheers. I walk in because I've been there forever. And, hey, Pat, how are you? And it, you just feel like, well,
feel at home.
Yeah, this is cool.
Right.
I like this.
Yeah, there's often surveys of, you know, ranking different kinds of institutions, not just financial services, but entities about, you know, service to customer or member in our case and whatnot, to the person off the street. And credit unions always, as an aggregate nationwide, always rank at or very near to the very top of that in terms of what you were just talking about.
Right.
You know, how
well, and I must say, before I get into trouble, we have some great banks as well.
We do.
Because I know a lot of people that are that work at the banks and run them, and they're all wonderful. And we have, we're very lucky in Vermont.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing in any of the discussion that we've had that should infer that, you know, banks bad, credit union good. Like you said, there are some and many, you know, very good banks in the state of Vermont and that, you know, strive to support their communities, like we talked about, and give preferential rates and so on and so forth. It, where the difference when we very first started talking out to me is in the underlying structure of the organizations. And, you know, one is, you know, has to be cognizant of profit going to a smaller group of individuals, not necessarily the person with the checking account standing across the counter. And the credit union, on the other hand, you know, is driven by, you know, how much return can I give to everybody who's a member of this organization.
Right. Well, and I think the number one, what do we say? We were the number one for access in the United States of America. That says it. Vermont's number one on a lot of things. Of course, that's per population, which kind of helps us a little bit on the smaller side of things. But it's still a pretty good bumper sticker.
It sure is.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you very much, Joe Bergeron, for being the longest serving CEO and president of a credit union in the United States. Good for you.
It has been a pleasure chatting with you, Pat. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very
immensely.
Much. This is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Stay tuned for our next guest.